How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have a big show today. In a couple of hours, what may end up being one of WWE's biggest B shows of the year takes place on pay-per-view. It is WWE Extreme Rules, headlined by Brock Lesnar's first WWE match in nearly a decade. He'll be facing John Cena. No rules, no DQ. Lot of talk about what the finish of this match is going to be, the future of Brock Lesnar in WWE over the course of the next year, what they're going to be doing with John Cena. We're going to talk all about that match, plus preview the entire show. We have 7 matches scheduled thus far, including 1 free match that you can watch on YouTube head-to-head with the last half hour of the show. Not that you'd want to stop listening to this show, of course, but in case you want to see Santino Marella versus The Miz for the U.S. title, we'll preview that match as well. That's coming up right after the show goes off the air. And, of course, live running play-by-play of the event with Dave Meltzer up at WrestlingObserver.com starting at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. In addition to that, we got a ton of news, including notes on last night's Extreme Reunion event promoted by Shane Douglas. Said to be, in many ways, a disaster, which soon you will be able to relive if you were there, or watch for the first time if you were not, via the magic of pay-per-view. We'll talk about all of the events that went down last night on that show, plus all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, all the TV from this past week, Impact with the Gut Check Challenge, as well as actually they had about 5 concepts on one show. We'll talk about all of those. Plus, I went to TNA Friday night in Kent, Washington. I went to the TNA event. We'll talk about that house show there. Fun time live. As well as Overeem, Diaz, Bagwell, Accidents. So much news to talk about here today, along with my partner, Mike Sempervivi. We'll be back in just a moment talking all of that and more. It's going to be a packed day here on the program. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet over at WrestlingObserver.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brian Alvarez and at Sempervivi. We're here talking about the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which is taking place tonight. We're going to preview the entire card. And Mike, before we go any farther, is Brock Lesnar winning the match tonight?
It's scaring me. It's still scaring me. We talked about it a little last week. I don't know why you'd give a guy a 80-20 contract, one that you point out and frankly burn through a year of storyline on Monday night, and not have him go beat John Cena. Even the banana peel type of thing where Brock just murders him the entire time, and I think, as you said this week, slips in Cena's own blood and somehow gets rolled up, and then he kills him afterwards. Even that is just lunacy to me. I just don't see how you can do it. I'm stunned. I'm stunned that there's that good of a possibility where we have no idea what the finish is. I guess in a way you could say that's good because it creates a lot of drama out of, you know, who is actually going to win this match and, you know, getting your 50, 60 bucks worth that way. But anything other than Lesnar winning is just mind-boggling to me.
As I mentioned earlier in the week, if you're going to do slip on a banana peel or blood or whatever, to me, if your idea is we'll just have Brock Lesnar destroy him and then John Cena, you know, gets a fluke pin and then Brock Lesnar kills him afterwards. If you're going to do that, you may as well just have Brock Lesnar beat him. I don't see the point in getting a win if you're going to be destroyed for 99% of the match. It just seems like, well, as you said, lunacy. Lunacy! But if I were Vince McMahon, which I'm not, thank God, but if I were and I had to book long-term this Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Rock storyline, To me, it's pretty simple, actually. Brock Lesnar does not lose to anyone. Brock Lesnar does not lose to John Cena. He does not lose to, say, Randy Orton at SummerSlam, which is a proposed match. He does not lose to anyone until WrestleMania of next year, at which point, somewhere around Royal Rumble or something like that, Rock comes back and he says, I vowed last year that I was going to come back and win the World Heavyweight title, or the WWE Championship. And at that time, obviously, since Brock loses to nobody, he would be the champion. And Rock would challenge him to a title match at WrestleMania, and Brock Lesnar would accept at some point. You do the match. The match would be gigantic. Rock fighting for the title against the unbeaten Brock Lesnar. Rock beats him and wins the title. And then from there, you do a five-month, six-month storyline. About 5 months. Leading to John Cena beating The Rock for the title at SummerSlam. So, in the end, it all comes full circle. John Cena gets his win over The Rock. John Cena beats the man who beat Brock Lesnar. John Cena is the champion. Brock and Rock go on their merry way. And all is right in the world. That, to me, is the most effective way to do it. It's so simple that it's guaranteed to not happen that way.
Of course, and it's the easiest thing, and that's the direction that I would go to, and that's why Monday night seemed extremely short-sighted to me. Reports of Lesnar facing Randy Orton in Los Angeles at SummerSlam are extremely short-sighted to me. People wanted to see Brock Lesnar come back and kick ass. You already have Cena in a weakened state where you've already got some question about him right now, and he's got question about his own character and the whole nine yards there coming off of Rock. So you don't have to have Brock Lesnar do what he did with Johnny Ace on Monday. Why do that already? To me, it should be, he should be burning through the roster slowly, where I don't know who it is at SummerSlam, but say a CM Punk or somebody like that. Then maybe he starts getting even more prima donna-ish as things go along, and you have Alberto Del Rio. Then he faces off against bad guys. He's starting to annoy everybody and piss off everybody. And you have Del Rio, who's actually got legit MMA experience, and I don't know how much deep tapes would cost. Obviously, they're probably not getting the Pride footage of him getting killed by Crow Cop, but they would have something from deep that you could play, and he goes and beats Del Rio. And the last guy he goes through is Randy Orton, because he's the last saving grace that WWE has without an outsider coming back. So that would be Royal Rumble to me, and then that leads you into The Rock coming back like he said he would. He said he'd get the title back. He said he'd never go, even though he hasn't been there. And then, yes, he wins the title at WrestleMania, gives Brock his first loss, and then goes to lose to Cena, who has been rebuilt by that time, in theory, at SummerSlam next year. Makes perfect sense. Why burn through it all so fast? Why they had to make Brock Lesnar a relative prima donna so early in the game, I'm really not quite sure, when you just had so much time to do things with him. Unless, it's less dates than expected, which is they had to get it all out of the way, and we'll explain why Brock is not there most weeks or something like that. But outside of that, it just, to treat this like they have the Money in the Bank angle last year with CM Punk, where they do the summer blockbuster thing. They just happen to be doing it much earlier in the season. It just boggles my mind.
Well, listen, I'm going to defend Brock as the businessman here, the angle they did on Monday night. I think that it was not the best segment in the world. It was kind of boring at times. Yes, Brock is just a big monster beast that kills everybody, but the issue to me is, in order for this to work, I suppose you could turn Brock babyface now and then turn him heel before the match with The Rock. But I think that obviously Brock has to be the heel going to that match with Rock at WrestleMania. And the problem is that if you just book Brock Lesnar as an unbeatable killing machine, he's going to be the biggest babyface in the entire company. And
But that's not exactly how I would book him, though, where he starts that way because the people have taken to him that way. But then as time goes on, suddenly dial in a little bit, him being more of a douche, or he misses a show. Well, why did he miss the show? And he calls in, or somebody calls in and says, well, it's because of my contract, remember?
Well, the issue with that is that, as we saw with WrestleMania, even though there's no chance of John Cena being cheered, or there was no chance of him being cheered against The Rock in Miami, realistically, there's little chance of him being cheered at Extreme Rules. And they desperately want John Cena to be cheered. No matter how many times they try and fail, they desperately want him to be a cheered top babyface. And so I think Monday, your idea is great, but the first guy they booked him against was John Cena. And so they had to pull that card immediately. They had to pull the Brock Lesnar is negotiating. Brock Lesnar wants a better contract. Brock Lesnar wants this. Brock Lesnar's kind of boring. Brock Lesnar, blah, blah, blah. Boring is probably the wrong word because I don't think they wanted to make him boring. But I do think that they thought the idea of Brock hijacking the show and talking about his contract would guarantee he would be booed in that segment. And I think that they think that that was going to help him tonight against John Cena in terms of getting cheered against Cena, but it's not. Brock is going to be cheered like crazy against John Cena tonight. I think it's kind of a... Maybe he won't, but I would expect it. So I think that's the whole reason they're doing this. They've got to find ways. And listen, as long as Brock Lesnar doesn't lose to anybody, I don't care what you do with him. As long as when the bell rings, he goes in there and kills dudes. To a degree, I don't care what you do with him. I should temper that, because I don't need them putting a wig on him like they did to Goldberg or having him involved in comedy segments. But if they want to make Brock Lesnar the real Brock Lesnar, the guy who he just wants a good deal, he doesn't care about this business, he shows up late, he leaves early, he wants nothing to do with anything, that's fine. You know, whatever you need to do, but just don't beat the guy. That's all I care about.
At the end of the day, yes. And that's, again, why it makes tonight a real shaky, you know, very shaky on what could possibly happen. Because then again, how do you explain this away on Raw on Monday? And, you know, it just, not for me.
We'll be back in just a moment, everybody, talking more about this card. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have lots of stuff to talk about today. We are going over the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which starts immediately after the show goes off the air. Dave Meltzer doing live running play-by-play of the event up at WrestlingObserver.com. And later on this evening, we'll be doing a special audio show talking the news coming out of the show. And there will be plenty of it, no matter what happens in the main event. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena. It is an Extreme Rules match. I had somebody the other day suggesting the finish of, I guess, Brock destroying John Cena so bad that they award the match to Cena. But that won't work. It's Extreme Rules. You can't be disqualified for excessive violence. There has to be a winner. And to me, the winner needs to be Brock Lesnar. And we'll see what they do tonight. I know, as I've mentioned a couple of weeks back, there are people in WWE that may not necessarily know the finish, but they are sure that John Cena is winning based on the build. I am holding out hope that the reason they feel this way is because of the booking of John Cena. He, of course, lost to Rock. He lost to Lord Tensai. Maybe he's on the losing streak. Maybe he's on the skid where he can't win the big one. And perhaps Brock Lesnar will beat him, destroy him. He'll take a month or so off. He'll heal up, and he'll come back for the feud with Lord Tensai, which actually was planned before WrestleMania, before they signed Brock Lesnar. They were going to do a feud with John Cena and Lord Tensai. And Tensai having defeated him, that would certainly play into Cena coming back to feud with him and get his win back on pay-per-view to end the skid. But one way or the other, I think John Cena has to lose tonight. And I know a lot of people are perhaps giddy at the thought that he'll win, so I lose my mind later.
Hey, you know, will you lose your mind as much, or you shouldn't be losing your mind if that happens. It should be WWE, you know, proving that they were losing their mind. I mean, that's the other thing with this too. Cena, I mean, if this whole thing about them desperately wanting Cena to get cheered, you know, if he needs to go away for a little bit, you know, even if it's for 1 month, that's fine. He does actually need to go away, and you could have the, you know, explanation of him, you know, healing up or something like that, or I don't know, send in like speeches from the hospital, like Ted DiBiase used to do in Georgia way back in the day, you know, that sort of thing. If they stop trying to shove Cena down people's throats, see, people will sooner or later take back to Cena. When there's a guy in there that they hate, they will tend to like Cena as long as he's not being a cartoon and he's actually, you know, serious. Believe me, there are going to be people that will be very happy if he goes out 2 months from now at the, you know, whatever the, after the next pay-per-view is, and he comes back and he just completely beats the hell out of Lord Tensai. I think that will be something people want to see because they obviously don't want to see Lord Tensai.
You know, the single biggest pop that John Cena ever received in his life, I think, was when he made that surprise return at the Royal Rumble after he'd been gone for a while.
Yeah.
He'd been off television for a while, and then he came back, and everybody went haywire. Of course, they booed him later, but fact is, when he first came back, they went crazy for him. So sometimes the best thing you can do is go away for a while and return. So
and
hopefully,
there have been those little, you know, bumps up, and then, you know, again, bring it up after Del Rio when he lost to Punk, and he was just being serious, and he was pissed off. That 1 week with Kane, even all the goofiness with Ryder and everything, when he was just beating the crap out of Kane, people actually responded. You know, it was why, like, also Monday, you know, one of the only problems I had with it is, you know, Cena coming to the ring with the chain and looking hesitant was one thing. It was then the overacting, you know, that came from the two, where he's got the Vince, you know, big gulp and all that sort of stuff. I mean, you know, obviously you're worried about a big guy kicking your ass, and you're thinking, yeah, this big guy is going to kick my ass. But, you know, it was the overacting and the overdone bits with John Cena, too, is, again, that's what's hurting him. And look at Brock on Monday. Even though it was a little boring and slow and he stumbled a little bit, one of the good parts that made that thing and what makes Brock and this whole character is he's not like the other guys because he says what he thinks. Which, again, you know, the overscripting of everything for everybody, that is what's making Brock fresh, and that's what, you know, there's another concern, too, with, you know, how much you're going to try to script him as things go along here.
The other matches on the show, which we should discuss, CM Punk and Chris Jericho. This pay-per-view takes place in Chicago, Illinois, the home of CM Punk. It's a Chicago street fight with Chris Jericho, which essentially just means no rules, extreme rules. And I don't know. I expect Chris Jericho to win. I expect him to beat Punk for the title. I expect that it's due time for Punk to lose in his hometown. They beat everybody in their hometown. As I've mentioned a million times, Punk was supposed to lose in his hometown back at Money in the Bank, but they changed the finish at the last minute. So he actually got a win in his hometown, which, by the way, did wonders for CM Punk. But WWE doesn't see it that way. You must be beaten in your hometown regularly in this company. Why? I've never quite figured that out, but you must. So, anyway, he's going to be going in there against Jericho. I know that some people are expecting Jericho to lose because he's going to be off for the summer touring and doing that sort of thing. But I think he's going to stick around for a while now, at least the next month or so, maybe a couple months. And he may be around Mondays and Sundays, if you know what I mean. So I just have this feeling that CM Punk loses the title here tonight. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Jericho originally, when I first was told that he was leaving, it was going to be around May that he was going to be heading out for a while, short-term departure to do some stuff with the band. And it is the very end of April here, so that would be next month. So maybe they don't like the idea of putting the title on a guy for a month, although it's not like they haven't done that 8 million times previously. And you have to remember with Chris Jericho, he always has a story, and the story is not necessarily always what's really going on. Chris Jericho says he's leaving for the summer. I often think that means he's not leaving at all, because that's the game he plays. He never tells you when he's really leaving. He never tells you when he's really coming back. So we'll see what happens tonight, but my gut tells me Jericho beat CM Punk.
Amanda's a professional.
He is a professional.
Now, it's hard for me, because again, you know, with him, if it is going to be about a month, there's no reason he shouldn't win the title tonight, and I'm sure somebody in WWE is still very upset over the fact that they made the audible call last year at Money in the Bank, and Punk goes over Cena in his hometown. Even though it worked, I can still, someone there is probably upset about that for God knows what reason, but it's hard for me to believe that Jericho won't win, just because, again, Punk can get the title back at any time, but I don't know. I'm not sure how they're viewing Lesnar and Cena, if it's, you know, they actually have got themselves convinced that Cena, if he does lose tonight and he does get beat up a lot, they're going to need some sort of feel-good, so CM Punk in his hometown will be the way to go or something like that, but I'll actually go with CM Punk tonight. I have no idea how it's going to happen, but maybe he's the one unique guy that can break the trend over always getting beat in his hometown. I'll actually go with Punk tonight. Just not real sure how it's going to happen.
I wish everybody would win in their hometown. I think that Punk should win.
They do it all the time. I mean, don't beat the guy in their hometown. Get heat on them. But every once in a while, yeah, they win there. Makes sense.
I think they should always win in their hometown. I think the idea is, if you're WWE, you should have a hometown hero. Every hometown should have a hero. Where, for example, every time Daniel Bryan comes to Washington State, he wins a big match. And to me, this business has been built on hometown heroes for like 120 years. And the idea of humiliating the guy in his hometown every single time he come to town, I honest to God have absolutely no idea how that benefits business. You know, if you run a city every single week, then yes, the guy doesn't have to win every single week. If you're coming back every Friday night, then every now and then you beat the guy, you get some heat, and then the next week or whatever, he comes back and he gets his win back. He's still the hometown hero, you know? And nowadays, when you only come to a town every 6 months, then if you have a hometown hero who wins all of his matches in his hometown, then you send that guy around to do publicity whenever the show is going to come to town. And people pay their money because they're going to get to go see CM Punk beat somebody's ass in his hometown. That's what this should be. This is so easy. I mean, you could look at, like, it was Joe Lauzon when he had that big fight in his hometown and the place went nuts for him and he won and they just lost it when he won that match. And now Joe Lauzon, you can use him to sell tickets in that city till the end of time. He doesn't have to be an active fighter. Make hometown heroes. You should do it. I mean, there shouldn't even be a question. A guy should never lose in his hometown unless, I can't even think of a good reason nowadays, because you run there once every 6 months. And have CM Punk beat Chris Jericho here. That's what you should do. But listen, when CM Punk said, I'm going to beat you in my hometown in front of my father and my sister, I was just like, well, you're doomed. You are doomed. You're going to be humiliated in front of these people, because that's what they do, and it sucks.
I'll save a little bit more of my rant about this until after the break, but I'll just say it now. I mean, you're probably going to also say something stupid like, you know, every once in a while, if you don't overdo it, embarrass the guy in his hometown, and then you'll end up getting 3 months' worth of storylines out of it. I mean, that's just way too old professional wrestling for me, Brian. That doesn't make any sense at all. Why would you want to do something like that?
What do you mean? Humiliate a guy and then use it
Every once in a while, I mean, God knows, if you don't overdo it, you get some heat on a guy in his hometown, and maybe you get like 3 months worth of rabid storylines and big ticket sales out of it. I mean, why would you want to do something like that? I mean,
because
you beat him there.
I will explain this. Because if you're coming back to the same city, it works. But if you beat CM Punk in Chicago and all the fans in Chicago boo, what does it have to do with Orlando, Florida next week? Nothing. The Orlando people don't necessarily care. Hold on, we got to head to a break. I'll be back in just a moment to talk more about this. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. I was in the middle of starting a big tirade about how you shouldn't beat a guy in his hometown nowadays, and apparently Mike's sarcasm went straight over my head. Isn't that right, Mike?
Yeah, that's my fault. I should explain this better. I just meant the aspect of, you know, putting heat on somebody. You think, you know, don't beat them in their hometown, which, you know, makes sense. It's what they used to do back in the day. I mean, that's how you had the hometown hero and guys like that. You know, the guy who played high school football, went to college in the town, played football, and, you know, he's the star and everybody loves him. But every once in a while, every quarter, every 6 months, something dastardly happens to that guy, and it fires up all the fans, and it fires up all of the people, and they get, you know, you get 3 months worth of a storyline out of something, and ticket sales shoot up, and there's interest, and people are talking about it. And I was just mocking that of you making far too much sense and thinking of things along that line when you could just be the guy in his hometown.
I see. I think the problem is that nowadays, I think what happened was a booker somewhere, maybe it was Vince Russo, I don't know, because he did a lot of things like this, but let's just say that you've got Wahoo McDaniel, and his specialty is the Indian strap match, okay? And Wahoo always wins the Indian strap match, because, as I mentioned, I think it was last week on this show, Sometimes you gotta tell fans what they're gonna get, and then you give it to them. For example, if Wahoo always wins the Indian strap match, then when a heel beats down Wahoo, and he beats down Wahoo, and he puts one over on Wahoo, and then finally Wahoo makes a challenge, I want you next week in the Indian strap match. Because Wahoo never loses that Indian strap match, all those fans know that if they buy their ticket, they're going to get to see Wahoo win. You basically are telling fans, Wahoo will win this match, and you can see it if you pay your money. And so the fans pay their money, and in fact, Wahoo wins, and they got what they paid for. That, to me, is the strength of being able to choose the winners and losers in pro wrestling. And that's a positive, not a negative. And I think that somewhere along the line, some young booker, or maybe he wasn't a booker at the time, maybe it was Vince Russo when he was still at the video store. Maybe Vince Russo was there that one time that Wahoo didn't win the Indian strap match, and his opponent got massive, massive amounts of heat because he actually beat Wahoo in his own match. Maybe he, I don't know, he you know, 10 men ran in behind the ref's back, or whatever your finish was, but somehow Wahoo didn't win, and there was just enormous heat. And some young booker saw that, and he thought, my God, look at the heat for when Wahoo didn't win. And he didn't understand why that worked, or what the circumstances were, or the fact that Wahoo had won 5,000 strap matches before he lost one. And so when he became a booker, it became the trademark of, every time somebody challenges someone to their match, they're going to lose, you know? Or maybe that young booker one day, he saw Jerry Lawler lose in Memphis, and there was like a tremendous amount of heat. And so from that point forward, every time somebody was in their hometown, he booked them to lose, thinking that, oh my God, the heat I'm going to get. And so now we've had a generation of guys losing their style of match and guys losing in their hometown every single time. And so now it doesn't really mean anything. It hasn't meant anything for years. If CM Punk loses in Chicago, is it really going to make any difference? No, the people in Chicago are going to be angry because their guy lost. And it's going to mean absolutely nothing for business. It is not going to boost business if CM Punk loses in Chicago. It is not going to put more heat on Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho isn't going to draw big numbers on the next pay-per-view, or he's not going to pop ratings on Raw because he beat CM Punk in his hometown. All you've accomplished is that you made the people in Chicago mad. That's where we are in this business nowadays. All you're doing is making the people mad. All you're doing is making the people upset at the company, not the guy that beat the dude in his hometown. So to me, there's absolutely no benefit of doing it. There's no benefit of beating the guy in his hometown. There's no benefit of the guy losing his specialty match. There's no benefit to any of this stuff. So to me, everybody should win their type of match, and everybody should win in their hometown. And maybe every once in a while, if, for example, the stars are aligned, maybe you know. I'll give you a good example. You know that, actually, it's a terrible example because I can't think of any specific names. But let's just say that that you know. Rock was a great example. Rock was WrestleMania was going to be in Miami, okay? And if Rock were working every week on television, which he's not, but just go with it. If Rock was working every week on television, then maybe you could have beaten Rock in Miami on a Raw. And you build your heat to Rock getting his win back in his hometown at WrestleMania. That's an example of when I think you can do it nowadays. If you know a guy is headlining WrestleMania in his hometown, then maybe earlier in the year when you do a Raw in that hometown, you can screw the guy. Because the guy is going to get his win back on the biggest show of the year in his hometown. But outside of that, I don't see any reason to ever beat a guy there. Ever. That's just my thought. And no, I know that you agreed with me, but I still had a five-minute tirade in me.
No, that's the biggest problem is just, and what you're saying makes complete sense, and it shows the lack of using basic psychological toys and long-term thought process. Because, again, they don't think of that. They're thinking of the next show, and they're thinking of rushing things out there, and they're just... It's just, I saw it last year with The Rock and the whole build-up and when he was used, and it was like, man, they had a year, and that was always the thing you could rely on WWE for, was when they were giving something long-term, and they really put their heart and soul into it, and they have two guys that are, you know, almost unflappable, you know, that they're not going to get it wrong. And they ended up getting it wrong. And the match at the Survivor Series last year, and then trying to go 50-50 and end up dragging down The Rock more than it benefited Cena, and you know, for a result that to, you know, everyone else outside of the bubble or even slightly outside of the bubble knew was going to happen. It's disappointing. It's disappointing. And again, I think, as you were saying about Lesnar too, all those things that you said of why they felt the need to do it, all of those things would have came naturally. And it's, you know, everybody's excited over the ass kicking Brock Lesnar being back. Over time, it's not as special. When he insults everybody over time and says how stupid you are for watching when I only came back for the money and you need me and obviously you're showering your love upon, all of the stuff would have turned naturally. Like the Rock, you know, people turn Rock face and heel in WWE during that, you know, the big attitude explosion time. I mean, fans dictated a lot and they were able to swing things and yeah, they did, you know, they obviously did what they were going to do. And as you said, you give the fans, wrestling's about telling the fans what they're going to get. And sometimes, like you said, you do actually have to give it to them because that's what keeps them coming back. And it's all of this stuff is very shaky. And again, Punk winning in his hometown, I would like to think it's going to happen. Maybe it's just too much faith, but I don't know exactly how it's going to go down. But I'll hope Punk wins, and I don't know if Christian's ready to come back and he trips up Jericho along the way and we get Punk Christian, which won't hurt my feelings or something like that. I don't know, but I tell you one thing too about Lesnar, because I don't know if I said it last week or not. My hope is also by the time it gets to Rock taking back the title, Brock Lesnar being the only one who ever actually had the unified big black belted title, maybe Undertaker and Hogan had it during that little time on SmackDown too, but it's my hope by the time next WrestleMania rolls around that he's also combined the two belts again.
We've also got the Sheamus-Daniel Bryan match, 2 out of 3 falls, so it's going to go longer than 18 seconds. Although I would not be surprised in the slightest if the first fall went 18 seconds. I would not be surprised one bit. Sheamus beats him immediately, and then Daniel Bryan evens it up in the second fall, and then Sheamus, I'm sure, beats him in the last fall to set up Sheamus versus Alberto Del Rio, and I don't know where they go with Daniel Bryan at that point. I'd like to see Daniel Bryan as champion again. Part of it is obviously that the yes chants are catching on, and they're just kind of a wacky thing that the fans love to do. But to me, Daniel Bryan is so much more of an interesting character and so much more of a star than Sheamus right now. Sheamus is a big fella. He's very pale. He's in shape, and he's got red hair. And he cuts promos that sometimes the fans cheer for, often they boo for nowadays, especially if they're involved with Daniel Bryan. But Daniel Bryan is he's a better wrestler. And there's nothing against Sheamus. I have nothing against Sheamus. But Daniel Bryan is a better worker. He has better matches. He's got a more interesting character at this point. He's got significantly better promos. He is a much better choice as champion nowadays. But that's not the direction they're going, and so probably Sheamus retains his title here tonight.
Well, hopefully it's not like Bob Backlund style, where he beats Daniel Bryan two straight falls in 9 seconds apiece, or was that King Kong Bundy and SD Jones, but beats him in 9 apiece, so it ends up being 18 combined for the two falls. But you got to be careful on who you put. I think Sheamus ends up winning this. I think it's been good for him to obviously keep working with Daniel Bryan. But I think you got to be careful with Sheamus now, too. I mean, if you put Sheamus in there with Alberto Del Rio, and Del Rio having more of a cool factor, I think, than Sheamus, I think you got to be careful there. And I just think Sheamus needs to be in there with somebody you continue to grow with, because they have so much, thoughts for being behind him. And he does get a great reaction when he comes out, at least. So you do have that going for you. So I think you got to be careful on who you put him in there with next. Although, I'm like you, I think you can do far more with Daniel Bryan with the belt, but I don't think they're going to go that direction. And Daniel Bryan, I'm not sure how they're going to continue on with the AJ storyline or any of that stuff after this, but I think Sheamus ends up getting the win. I think, like you said too, it's going to be a relatively quick first fall. I think Daniel Bryan drags him and beats him and is a technical wizard in a long second fall and really drags Sheamus out throughout the second and third before he ultimately gets the win at the end.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see. I don't care if they're on different brands. This doesn't matter nowadays anyway. I would love to see Randy Orton beat Kane, which I'm certain is going to happen. It's a false count anywhere match. They actually had a no DQ, I think it was, or I can't remember, last man standing, whatever it was. They had a match on television last year, like September or something of last year. It was actually a very good match. It was the one that ended when both guys shook hands. And I expect this to actually be a much better match than probably a lot of people are expecting. The feud must end. It sucks. End the feud with a great match. Move on. And let's do a Randy Orton versus Daniel Bryan feud. I think it would be great. It is, you could have it go from May through July. Have Daniel Bryan beat him. And maybe twice, and then Randy Orton gets his big win back in July in some sort of stipulation match. Or maybe even don't have Daniel Bryan beat him. If you want to build up Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, then have some sort of goofy finish in May, disqualification or whatever, I don't know. But have Randy Orton get two pay-per-view matches, maybe even three pay-per-view matches out of a feud with Daniel Bryan. Obviously win the last one decisively and whatever what you want to do earlier on. Maybe even do a, winner gets Brock Lesnar or whatever. I don't know. But do something. Build up Randy Orton with a, he'd have some great matches. You get the guy over, and then he's ready for Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. I would be more than happy with this booking schema that I've come up with.
I wouldn't have any complaints with that whatsoever. And then, Bryan would be far more over than anything coming out of that. And you'd go either way with him. Orton will be a far bigger, face coming out of that thing, too. Again, I think that's a no-lose situation there. And then, to me, you could put Sheamus in there with Del Rio and then let the fans kind of decide on who they're going to get behind. It's just, it's going to be hard for me to believe that sooner rather than later that people aren't going to take to Del Rio and actually flip him. No matter how obnoxious or how much they will try to get heat on him, I just think sooner rather than later, Del Rio is going to be someone the fans, it's going to be probably the next one the fans take too.
Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Short segment here, so let's do a quick preview of another match on the show. It is Nikki Bella versus Beth Phoenix for the Divas title. And, of course, Beth Phoenix was supposedly injured on Monday. We were supposed to believe it was real, but it wasn't. And so, since everybody knows it wasn't real, actually, this story's even better. They explained on WWE.com that it was real, and they attempted to claim on TV that it was real. But since some people on the internet figured out that it was fake, they decided to just bring Beth back and put her in a match here. I suspect that she will still sell the fake injury that we all know is fake, but they're still going to sell it as real on the pay-per-view. Are you following all this, everybody? Because it's preposterous. Anyway, I expect Nikki Bella to win the match here, and then tomorrow on Raw, I expect Kong Karma to return and destroy Nikki Bella and win the title, and we'll do the long, slow build to Karma versus Beth Phoenix. And by long, slow build, I mean I expect them to rush it and blow it off by the next pay-per-view. But the idea is it'll take longer than that. So that is my prediction for our big women's championship match here tonight.
I will actually go with that and do you a little bit better. Beth loses because of some sort of twin magic. They play it up, the injury. She ends up, quote-unquote, getting hurt worse, and that's why, you know, Bella's won. They go out, cut a big promo on Raw, yes, get slaughtered by Karma, and then she works her way through the roster, ending with Natty before Beth Phoenix at SummerSlam. That's going out way too long, though.
Well, I'm sure if they had their way, they'd try to drag it out until WrestleMania, but I think the chances of that happening are zero. I was going to give a percentage, but then I was like, seriously, Brian, are they really going to drag this out to WrestleMania? How many women do they have on the roster? So, yeah, it's probably going to end up blown off far earlier than that. But
hey, bring Trish back next year for WrestleMania. Why not?
Sure. Back in a moment. Hourly break. Wrestling Observer Live. Sports Byline. Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have been spending the last hour talking the WWE Extreme Rules pay-per-view and more. That pay-per-view, of course, starts immediately after this show goes off the air. 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the event on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. We're going to be up later on this evening with a brand new radio show talking that event and all of the news. And there should be a lot of it based on the finish of the Brock Lesnar-John Cena match. We've been running down the card. We have a couple of matches left very quickly, Mike. What are your thoughts on the Big Show versus Cody Rhodes for the Intercontinental title in a spin the wheel? Make the deal match, or whatever it's called.
Maybe you can end up with a coal miner's glove, which Cody can complain about, or giving Big Show an even bigger advantage with the big paw, but then somehow Cody turns around and gets the win out of the deal, which I think is going to happen, actually, with the way Cody's been treated since WrestleMania. They've just kind of extended it out here, and it'd be tough to believe that Cody doesn't get the win. I don't know how it really benefits either guy as it is anyway, but Cody gets the win. Nobody cares about the IC title. Everybody still kind of likes the Big Show. Everybody still kind of likes Cody, but not really looking forward to this one.
That is the full lineup with the exception of Santino versus The Miz, which is going to be starting here in about half hour, actually. If you want to watch that match, keep listening to us. But it's going to be streaming live for free on the YouTube channel. In fact, WWE's YouTube channel. So that's kind of interesting. Head up there and check that out. I don't know what's going to happen. Seems odd for Miz to win the title on YouTube. But I guess if they want to kick off their new pre-show plan, that would be one way to do it. So that's the pre-show match. And we'll actually talk about that after the break because that is an interesting concept. UFC tried that, and they only tried it once. And we'll talk about why. Coming up after the break, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And we have been talking Extreme Rules, and before the break, mentioned that the pre-show match is Santino versus The Miz. It is on YouTube, and hopefully they will disable comments because UFC tried this at one point, and it resulted in, since everybody was watching it on the internet, everybody on the internet was informing everyone else on the internet of how they could watch the show for free on an illegal stream. Not good. So UFC only did that experiment one time. And now WWE's trying it. I guess if you don't study the competition, the mistakes they've made, you just make the same mistakes. So they are going to be showing their match on YouTube. And I guess we'll see. Well, I doubt it'll make a huge difference in the buy rate. I think in terms of piracy, if you're going to buy the show, you're going to buy the show. And if you're not going to buy the show, you're not going to. And if you're not going to buy the show, you'll watch it with the stream. And if you can't find a stream, you're still not buying the show. So I don't think it's a major deal, but UFC clearly thought it was a significant deal. I think they believe that if 300,000 people were streaming the show, then if you remove the stream, those 300,000 people will buy the pay-per-view. And in my... I just don't think... And I did a poll a couple years ago on this, and I just don't think that's the case at all. I think if 300,000 people are streaming your show and you remove that stream, you'll get statistically zero of those streamers to actually buy the show. But who knows? Mike, your thoughts on any of this?
I think you do, but it's not to the level that they think. I think, you know, if they see, say there's 100,000 people they can prove watching on streams, well, you know, maybe 20,000 of those people would turn around, and if they know they couldn't do it again, or if they knew they don't know where to go get a second stream, and they're just not that interested in it, and they could pay for it, they're going to, and that does make some sense. But yeah, I mean, their thoughts that every single person that would be watching a stream would just, you know, if it gets cut off, they're going to turn around and pay for it. That's not the case at all. They just flat out won't watch. And, you know, WWE, they move, UFC was able to move everything over to their Facebook, which they had a strong one. WWE doesn't. And maybe that's what they're planning on doing out of this. It's not a bad move for me, because it has been quite some time since the Barker Channel. I've had Comcast and Comcast Digital for quite some time now, in two different areas. In both places, you don't get on the Barker Channel anymore. At least I don't. You don't get that match. You don't get the pre-show they would do, and like TNA having the free match and in the countdown show and all that stuff. You only get that if you actually order the pay-per-view, which boggles my mind. I don't understand why that's happened, or if it's just unique to my situation, but I can't believe that it is. So I guess to put it out somewhere, it's a good idea. I would assume if they actually had a channel, that's what the whole plan of this probably would, it would make a lot more sense there. But yeah, I guess it's fine. And honestly, I mean, there's a million one things you can do with Santino and a comedic sense and hooking him up with different people and all that sort of stuff. And I forget who it was. Who gave him a high five this week? Zack Ryder, I guess it was. And Jerry Lawler, of all people, was very correct to point out that, you know, you got to be careful with, you know, high-fiving the spider or the cobra, because you should have died from it and been knocked out and been able to be pinned, since that's what his finishing move is. But I guess sometimes the cobra just doesn't have its fangs out.
Well, you have to, the cobra must strike.
It's true. I guess you have a docile cobra. It's not like, you know,
I can pet
Damian
a snake.
Never did that over and over again.
Yeah, I can pet a snake unless it decides to strike. The cobra must strike. I can't believe
we're breaking
down the cobra here.
Well, you know, hey, I'm with you. I think with them trying to do a new thing, and, you know, Miz gets a win, so, you know, which she is in dire need of. But nobody sees it, so that's still fine if they're still trying to take something out on him. And it's, you know, again, it's much like talking about Cody Rhodes and Big Show. It's the title doesn't mean anything anyway, so the whole thing really doesn't matter.
Now, the speaking of Extreme, the Extreme reunion show took place last night, and there was good and bad. More good.
There was good?
More bad than good, actually. Well, the good was they did about 2,400 fans, so probably more people turned out for this show than for any other independent show that will take place all year long in the United States. The bad news is that was the end of the good news. We had at least two guys that had problems. Sabu collapsed in his hotel room. They had to bust down the door, rushed him to the hospital. Apparently he was okay, but checked himself out of the hospital today. I know that last night there were some people that were very concerned about him. And in fact, there were Facebook messages about how he had died, which was not the case. But apparently there were people that believed that had occurred, and they started Facebooking about it. And then, of course, it kind of, in some ways, I don't want to say went viral. I guess it did sort of from a low-level, you know, pro wrestling stance. But he's apparently all right, at least enough to check himself out of the hospital. Justin Credible passed out backstage, and they were concerned enough about his state that they kicked him out of an Extreme Reunion show. That, to me, tells you something. So the show itself started late. It was supposed to air on iPay-per-view. It didn't. There were technical issues. So apparently it's going to air on iPay-per-view in the next couple of days. I don't have a lot of details about the actual matches at this point. I do know that throughout the evening I was getting texts from the building, and there were some very unhappy fans. There were chants of end this show. There were chants of refund. There were people throwing things at the ring at the end of the show. It turned into quite the disaster. There were a couple of decent matches, including Jerry Lynn versus Devon Storm, formerly Crowbar. And the fans appreciated that. There were women flashing all night long. It was something else. I was getting reports all night and just baffled by them all. And sometimes you just can't go back. Sometimes you just need to let it go. And I've thought that about ECW for a while now. But boy, is it time to just let it go. It's just time to let it go.
Yeah, just sad all the way around. I mean, you know, good for Jerry Lynn and Crowbar, and I guess the chance of Jerry, please save the show, I guess, took place and everything. But, I guess, best wishes, obviously, to Justin Credible and Sabu, who is Sabu, after being unconscious, and they break down the door of the hotel and just checked himself out of the hospital, saying he's fine. So it's just, yeah, it's just really depressing. It's really, really depressing. And, you know, it shows the amount of people that they did reach out to that turned down the booking. And it's, again, as you said, you know, positive in a way in the fact that it got so many people there. And I guess it was a hot crowd, and it was the crowd basically began to be turned, you know, during the show. It wasn't that they, you know, went in there with a bad attitude or anything like that, but it's just as the show went on, they seemed to turn more and more from it, and really, you know, took it out on Shane Douglas at the end and in his match. So it's, just sad and depressing all the way around, and too bad.
I don't want to preach or anything like that, but I know that, like, the glory days of ECW were, like, the best times of some of these people's lives, many of these people's lives, but it was, like, 15 years ago, and I just kind of think it's time to move on and create a new best time of your life, as opposed to trying to relive this period that was, I mean, this company died a decade ago. It died a decade ago, and it's now, to me, like, far beyond the point of sad to just keep hanging on. You know, it's like the guys, you know, the guys that never got out of high school, and they're like 45 now, and you see them at the gym, and it's just kind of sad. You know, it's time to move on. Create something new in your life. Go do something fun. And anyway, like I said, I'm not going to preach, but this show really made me sad. So anyway, that was Extreme Reunion from last night. I'm sure we'll have more reports up on the front page at WrestlingObserver.com. And as noted, in a couple of days, it's going to be available on iPay-per-view if you want to check it out. So we're back in just a moment, listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Let's talk about some mixed martial arts, Mike, including the Alistair Overeem hearing from this past week. He went before the Nevada State Athletic Commission, went before the Nevada State Athletic Commission in regards to his failed urine test. Testosterone, epitestosterone ratio of 14 to 1. He had his latest news story, which was that What was his newest story? I'm confused at this point. He's had like three of them. I guess the newest story was, which one was it?
He served with papers, right?
Yeah, but why was his testosterone level high? I've completely forgotten.
The injection he got from the doctor.
Oh, that's right, the mixture.
Yes.
The mixture.
Yeah, you saw Chael Sonnen's doctor reminded you of Buff Bagwell's doctor from the Nitro days hanging out there with Scott Steiner. No, we have a man that topped him.
That's right. Now I remember this storyline. So first he claimed that he needed testosterone replacement therapy, but then his team discovered that, in fact, in November, when he accidentally took a blood test instead of a urine test, it showed his testosterone levels were normal, so that didn't fly. And then the second excuse, which UFC was made aware of, was that he was suffering from erectile dysfunction, and he took a Viagra-like substance which boosted his testosterone. And then apparently, I guess, somebody figured out that, in fact, why would you need an erectile dysfunction drug if your testosterone levels were normal? And what drug would that be that an erectile dysfunction aid that boosted testosterone? They don't exist. So that one was out the window. And then finally, this one was that he hurt his rib. And so he went to a doctor in Texas, and the doctor gave him a shot. It was a mixture. It was part anti-inflammatory, part testosterone, which boosted him to levels of 14 times that of an average man. And that's why he failed. And suffice to say, the commission did not grant him a conditional license, shockingly. He has been, he cannot renew his license for 9 months, which is actually 8 months because they retroactively suspended him based on the date of his test failure in March. So he can relicense at the end of December, which means if UFC really wanted to, and if they really were confident that he would pass the drug test that he will need to get licensed, and given that that he will know the time and date of the test, and of course the fact that he's clean, he should pass. If he should pass, he would be able to fight at the big year-end show in December, which conceivably, if Junior Dos Santos retains the title against Frank Mir next month, which I would expect him to do handily, in fact, you could do Overeem versus Junior Dos Santos at the end of the year in December. I don't think that's going to happen, but you could. And the whole thing is just I would classify it a rigmarole.
I guess yes, because on this show we can't say cluster F. But yeah, and I don't know. And obviously the UFC should have, well, somewhat of a being angry at Overeem, and I can see why people are angry at Overeem. But Brian, did you ever see the movie Raising Arizona?
I have. Great movie.
Okay.
It's shocking that I'll actually say that when someone asks if I've seen a movie. But I have seen and enjoyed Raising Arizona.
Great, great movie. But remember when Nicolas Cage, whose name was High, and he goes and they let him out the first time, and he's in front of the panel, and it's just like, you going to do this again, High? No, sir. You know, you learned your lesson? Yes, sir. And okay, then. And they let him go, and then he's back in there again. And they go through the whole thing all over again, and the commission's up there, and they're talking to him, and it's just like, you know what recidivism is, High? And, you know, I think I know what the word is, and that's you, a chronic, you know, recidivism, whatever it was. Doesn't really matter. That's what basically this whole thing is. You know, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, he's suspended for 9 months because that's what they're going to do, and they don't really know what's going on there exactly, and it's just this and the Nick Diaz thing. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people angry with Nick Diaz, too. I don't think you should be. I think if you're against Nick Diaz in this, and most people are because he's, you know, kind of insane, and they're using every loophole available, everybody should actually be happy about this because Nick Diaz is using every loophole available. So even if it's, you know, nonsense or BS or not, but, you know, the commission should be learning from this. Everybody should probably be learning from this because then you go after Nick Diaz. You don't blame them for trying to bust through those holes or slight holes and try to break them open, but then you hem them up afterwards. I don't think they're going to, and that's the biggest problem. You know, you can get upset with the athlete all you want, and obviously that they deserve the, you know, duress that they're put under in any sport when it comes to, you know, performance-enhancing drugs. But to blame an athlete for taking them, I mean, that's just what they do. They've always done it. They're always going to try to get the advantage. It's the incompetence and the unwillingness to learn or the unwillingness to spend money or, I mean, you take any number of things when it comes to commissions in this country and it comes to how they are doling out punishments, and it's ridiculous. I mean, Alistair Overeem admits on Tuesday that he was told he was going to have to pee into the cup. And then right after the press conference, so everybody else lines up, he gets into a car and speeds away. It's not even that you were suspending him 9 months. It's everything else that goes in it where if a guy goes up there and says, I'm sorry, I didn't know I was taking, and it's going to be 9 months, fine, I'm fine with that. But when there's all of this other stuff that creeps in and is taking place and there is duplicity and there's all that sort of stuff, I mean, I don't want the death penalty to kill a guy's career, but you do have to do something extra in times of these extraordinary cases to send the message that you can't do those sorts of things. So it is extended out, and you are suspended further or fined more or something like that just to eliminate somebody trying to pull off stuff like this. I mean, it's so incredibly nonsensical. He didn't even have to show up, and he would have gotten 9 months. It just doesn't make any sense.
You know, somebody had made the comment, they didn't like the fact that this performance-enhancing drug issue they didn't feel it should cost men their livelihood. And I was kind of like, listen, Overeem is out for 9 months. He's going to fight again either in December or February. He's going to make millions of dollars. And he made millions of dollars with Brock Lesnar. No one's livelihood is being taken away. If you fail, let's take Joe Warren, for example, of Bellator. That dude failed a test for marijuana. Not steroids or anything like that, for marijuana. He failed a marijuana test. He was banned from Olympic competition for 2 years! And Alistair Overeem, who had a 14-to-1 testosterone-epitestosterone ratio, a guy who is... The performance-enhancing drugs allow him to deliver a worse beating to his opponent. That's a serious issue. I'll talk about Diaz here in a minute, but that's a serious issue. If you're going to take something that's going to allow you to deliver a more sound and violent beating to your opponent, that's trouble. And he got 9 months, 8 months, actually. So no one's livelihood is being taken away. Alistair Overeem isn't sitting there starving. Alistair Overeem is doing just fine. Now, in the Diaz...
Here's the other thing, too, when it comes to livelihood, and that gets thrown around a lot. And again, I'm not looking to murder anyone's career, but it does get to a point where, you know, a couple drug suspensions in the NFL, you're out.
That's
all I ever do is play football in high school. That's all I ever do is play football in college. I got pushed through. I don't really know what I'm doing in life. That's your problem. I hate that when it comes to pro wrestlers. Roddy Piper on HBO really pissed me off when he did the, oh, well, I'm 50-something years old. I don't know, you know, what else am I supposed to do? Get a job like everybody else. You know, Remy Bonyasky was a K-1 fighter. He's a model. He's into other things. Randy Couture with training and starting up a line of clothes and all that. So you have something, you know, it's to the point where, you know, the whole thing over, you know, their livelihood, it's getting to be a little bit because you shouldn't be there then. If you are injured and you have those sorts of problems and you need to take this stuff, then you shouldn't be there in the first place to have a livelihood.
Now, with the Diaz situation, I don't want Lance to get upset here, but let me preface this by saying that, number one, the rules are you must pass your post-fight drug test, and he failed. So, therefore, to me, it's, you know, you're done, dude. You failed. You know the rules, and you failed, okay? I don't care about any of the arguments about cards. He has a card. He has this. He has that. The bottom line is that you need to pass your test. Those are the rules, and you failed. So I will preface this by saying that from that perspective, I feel that Diaz, the proper punishment was doled out based on the rules. Now, with all that said, when it comes to marijuana in mixed martial arts, to me, the issue is, I don't want anybody going into the ring high. And it's funny, when I ranted about this several months ago, I had all of these I hate to just use the term pot smokers, but it's basically what it was. that wrote and emailed and just were outraged that it doesn't matter if you go into a fight high, you would perform worse. It doesn't dull pain. And meanwhile, you know, you Google medical marijuana and the first thing that comes up is pain management, pain management, pain management. And then a couple of weeks ago, Joe Rogan, of all people, flat out came out and said, pot makes people roll better. Pot is great when you're doing jiu-jitsu. You roll better. It's better. So anyway, point of this is, whatever you believe, I don't think that you should go into a fight high. With that said, if you have a medical marijuana card and you are legally able to smoke in your home state and you've got a fight coming up and you cease usage 8 days before, like Nick Diaz claims that he did, then if you have lingering metabolites on the day of the fight, I don't think that's a big deal. Now, I don't know the levels that Diaz had. Here's my problem with Diaz, though, after saying all that. All I know is that in the Gomi fight, his metabolite levels were sky high. His metabolite levels were not, I ceased usage 8 days before. I don't know when he ceased usage, but it was not 8 days prior. And I'm up against a break, so I'm going to continue this rant when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 20 minutes. And before the break, I was ranting and raving about Nick Diaz and his marijuana metabolites argument that he is making before the commission. And just a quick recap. To me, the rules are the rules. If you break the rules, you're done. And that's what happened with Nick Diaz. He tested positive for marijuana metabolites. That is against the rules, and therefore, I support the decision to suspend him. Now, with that said, I do believe that the issue with marijuana is going into a fight high. And if you're a medical marijuana user, and you cease usage a week or two before your fight, and you go into the fight with a clear head, then I don't see a problem with that. The question with Diaz remains, what were his levels? The Gomi fight, where he tested positive after beating Takanori Gomi, his levels were sky high. So to me, that's an issue. I don't want anybody going into a fight high. So to me, the issue all comes down to what are the allowable levels in Nevada? Are the levels such that if a normal person ceases usage 10 days or 8 days before a fight, will they be above that level? These, I think, are the questions that that need to be answered and need to be addressed by the commissions. Because, listen, there are, you know, if Nick Diaz is a guy that has ADHD, like he claims, and the medical marijuana is something that he can legally take that helps him with his issues, then I don't see a need to prevent him from doing something that that helps him in his off time. But how that affects the fight to me is the issue. I don't want anyone going into a fight high. I think if you have been I don't know. It's a very complicated situation. To me, it's totally different from steroids. And again, I don't know what Diaz's levels were. You know, he claims he stopped 8 days before the fight. But, you know, if his levels were as high as they were in the Gomi fight, then there's absolutely no defense of his position. So, Mike, any thoughts on that?
I agree with you in that you know, Diaz is, you know, For anything that comes up, he's running out of, he's going to be suspended, and he should really just eat that instead of actually diving through some of these holes, or at least attempting to and drawing this thing out even further. But with that said, I mean, even though I'm quite liberal as far as, you know, the marijuana aspect goes, the problem with that is going to be how, you know, when it comes to other drugs, I always thought that was the deal with Mike Tyson was, he couldn't be on a lot of, you know, medication, and boxers can't be on a lot of medication because they have to get off before a fight to be, you know, would be quote-unquote clear-headed. And the same thing with marijuana. I mean, if you let that in, I don't know the physics exactly behind it, but, you know, fat storage, it when it comes to metabolites and things like that, and some people burn fat far faster than others. So I don't know, again, I don't know how you are going to look at a baseline balance of you test the guy to make sure he's not going into the ring high. So I think you've got a slippery slope there when it comes to, you know, the metabolites and things like that. But again, I'm not quite sure. Maybe somebody can let me know about exactly how you could do a test like that to make sure somebody wasn't going in, you know, to the levels where, like you said, when it comes to the Gomi fight, where people just, it's tough to believe that he did not go in there completely stoned, which, you know, probably when it comes to Pride in Japan, wouldn't have been the first time somebody had done something like that. But I guess Nate Diaz came out and said, you know, Nick doesn't really care right now anyway, because we're going into triathlon season and all that sort of stuff. And really, at the end of the day, he's going to be out for 9 months or whatever it's going to be. But, you know, as soon as he's, you know, even remotely possibly, you know, unlike an Overeem, who I don't think is a slam dunk guarantee that he'll be back in UFC. I think he will be, but I don't think it's much of a slam dunk as Nick Diaz being back in UFC.
I say you just find a fair average level. You find a fair average level for what a normal person would be at if they ceased smoking 8 days before a fight, or 10 days before a fight, or 2 weeks, whatever your number is. And whatever that average number is, that's your level. And if you happen to be a person who metabolizes marijuana a little bit slower, then that means you have to stop earlier. And that to me is the easiest way to do it. That's fair for everybody. I mean, the idea that...
I guess, but you know what, Brian? Then we're walking into the dopey, and this is working in baseball, it's working in MMA right now. I don't know how it's going to work in football or anything else when it comes to testosterone replacement therapy, where we have guys, well, you need to get back to a certain level so I can make it fair. And then, you know, there's the obvious other side where I know you fall in on this, where it's like, well, if you need to take it to get it up anyway, again, this may not be your sport. So, you know, it could end up causing just more problems for these commissions and doctors and stuff like that anyway, because, God, look at how they're handling all this now.
Yeah, but that's bringing a level up. That's trying to bring a level up to supposedly, as they claim, even this playing field. To me, they're completely different situations. With testosterone replacement therapy, this is easy to abuse. You know, you boost a guy up to 14-1, and he trains harder than anybody else, and he adds all of this muscle and everything like that, and then he uses that to go in and kill a dude. You know, with marijuana, I mean, what, the guy rolls better for a few months before the fight? I see these as two completely different things. My belief in terms of performance enhancement of marijuana are that, yes, a guy may feel like he rolls better when he's stoned, but is he really becoming significantly better at jiu-jitsu? I don't think so. Maybe he is. I don't know. I just think that guys, they feel that when they are high, they roll better. But do I believe that if you take a guy and you train him in jiu-jitsu sober, and then you take a guy and you train him in jiu-jitsu high, that at the end of 10 months, the guy who trained high is going to be significantly better than the other guy if all things are equal? I don't believe that.
And no way.
In an actual fight, you know, I don't think that you're going to go in there and be pain-free if you're high, but if all things are equal and you go into a fight high and you can sustain a little more punishment, that's unfair to your opponent. So to me, the issue with marijuana is you should not be high in the fight. You should not have smoked within, I don't know, however long before a fight. You know, you'll have people emailing me go, Brian, you could smoke 12 hours before a fight and you'd be sober going into the cage. Okay, whatever. I just don't think you should be high in the cage. But other than that, I don't see how marijuana is helping your game at all. Whereas with testosterone replacement therapy, I can name a million reasons why getting on testosterone replacement therapy and boosting your levels to 14-1 is going to significantly help your game and significantly put your opponent in danger.
Oh, I agree with you 100% on because, you know, for anybody, anything anybody wants to say about the rolling part of it, well, it's, you know, you get into the habit, you get into the routine of rolling high, and you're comfortable doing it. So, yeah, and anything people want to say about, well, you know, you can, the ability to absorb more punishment in the fight and things like that, and you look at, you know, marijuana's negative effects of how it affects you, you know, they balance out. I mean, it's like going into a fight drunk, and that's where I think it's also the smell test and the obvious, how is the guy going into the fight in the first place, too? I mean, if he seems high going into a fight, then, you know, there should be cause for more concern or to look at or things like that. But, yeah, to me, it's a relatively non-issue. I just see it, though, becoming an issue if they do something like that with metabolites or they try to figure something out where somebody doesn't bring up something, you know, quote-unquote scientific or something their doctor told them along those lines, the same way it happens with TRT. And, again, all of this, for me at least, goes back into, again, the trouble with the commissions, the testing process, the whole nine yards when it comes to everything. And even if UFC, you know, institutes testing and they want to try to catch guys and things like that, it's going to be questionable how they deal with them, too, if they begin testing and put more of the onus on themselves. I mean, what do they do when they have situations like that? Do they look the other way for marijuana tests or something like that, even though they may technically be over? I don't know. It is a messy thing, and I guess we could just do what Phil Baroni wants to do, which is, of course, have everything legal, have everyone blown up, have it like as close to Pride and K-1 freakiness as you could possibly have, and men could kill each other inside the Thunderdome.
You know, the other thing I want to mention before we wrap this subject up is the other thing I heard when I was arguing why you should not be stoned in the cage is I had people saying, Brian, it's not a performance enhancer. In fact, if I went in there stoned, I'd get my ass kicked. Which my response is, that's another great reason to not allow it. I don't want either person to be at a disadvantage. Whether it's a performance enhancer or it's a performance detractor, the person should not be allowed inside the cage. I don't want them to have an advantage over their opponent, nor do I want this person to be so inhibited that they're open to being badly damaged or injured. So it just, no marijuana competition, everybody. Whatever you decide to do out of competition is whatever you decide to do. But as noted with the Diaz situation, in some ways, I think, you know, if the guy really is stopping 8 days before the fight, fine. But Diaz, the issue with him, again, is that he has had a failure where the levels came out and they were sky high. That, to me, is a great concern. And I want to know how that plays into his latest suspension. So anyway, that's enough of that. I went to a TNA house show in Kent, Mike.
They like to run Kent, am I not mistaken?
Well, they've come to Kent a few times, which leads us to the hilarity of Jeremy Borash. The last time they were in Kent, he claimed it was the 100,000th refereeing match in the career of Earl Hebner. Which, by the way, in doing the math, I think he'd have to have refereed for approximately 132 years to have reached 100,000 matches. But
I know you talked to those old guys working the Crockett territory where he was, and they worked 75 times a week, 8 on Sunday.
That's right. But anyway, so the last time they were in Kent, he'd worked his 100,000th match. And this time in Kent, he had worked his 100,000th match that day. It was amazing. It was like the show had never left the building. It was like time had not passed. But Earl was a highlight of the show. If you've never been to a TNA house show, you should go just for Earl Hebner. He's a crazy old man, and he's absolutely awesome interacting with the fans. And I'm surprised that he has not been jumped. I'm surprised he has not been attacked. Every time I go to a show, somebody wants to kill Earl Hebner when he first comes to the ring and has to be held back by security. And looks like so far their security team has done well because nobody's gotten through. But I enjoyed that. It's a good show. A couple of very good matches. Austin Aries and Zema Ion was excellent. And Daniels and Kazarian, my new favorite tag team, against Motor City Machine Guns was awesome. There was a Gail Kim Velvet Sky match, which was fine. It's probably better than a match you'd see on television. There was a Matt Morgan versus Crimson match, which was pretty bad. And the fans, God, did they hate these guys. They were heckled perpetually during this match. And then the main event was Bobby Roode versus Rob Van Dam for the title. Yes, the same match we're going to see on pay-per-view in May. I saw it for free. Well, not for free. I paid for tickets, but I saw it here on this house show. It was fine. They worked hard, but nothing, you know, it was a WWE house show match, essentially. So hopefully they pick it up for television. But I had a great time there. It was a good show. It was a lot of fun. A lot of great crowd interaction. And we'll talk about that a little more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And we're going to wrap it up here. As I noted, if you ever get a chance to go to a TNA house show, it's a good time. And most of all, bring your kids, because there's a lot of great fan interaction with all of the wrestlers. It's an intimate setting, since they only draw between 700 and 1,000 usually. So if you want a picture with one of the guys in the ring, Rob Van Dam, etc., you can do that. There's always people out there. So bring the kids. They always have a great time if they're TNA fans. But as noted, we're going to wrap this up. The show is ending, but another show is beginning. WWE Extreme Rules from Chicago. Brock Lesnar versus John Cena in the main event. Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan for the heavyweight title. CM Punk versus Chris Jericho for the WWE title. Orton versus Kane, Falls Count Anywhere. Big Show versus Cody Rhodes. Perhaps a tuxedo match, I don't know. And Nikki Bella versus Beth Phoenix. The, it's actually over already. We missed it. The Santino Marella versus Miz match that was on YouTube. But Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the show on the front page immediately after this show ends. And then later tonight, Dave and I are going to be up with a brand new radio show. All of the results, all of the news, and more. And Mike, final question. Is this buy rate going to beat Survivor Series?
What was that one?
Buy rate going to beat Survivor Series?
Well, I forget what it was, but you know what was Money in the Bank, about 200,000?
About 100, let's just say 142,000 domestic.
I think this can actually do 175 to 195, and the bad part about it is it'll lead them into a false sense of security.
Well, we shall see. Vince McMahon has promised that next year at this time, business will have turned around. That was his claim.
Oh, they're going to drop the movie division?
Actually, no, but they're trying to revamp it. But anyway, everybody, we're going to wrap it up. Don't forget WrestlingObserver.com, all of the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, daily radio shows. We have a members area for only $11.99 a month. And $10.99 a month, actually. I overpriced myself. But thousands of radio shows, so head up there and check that out. We got free shows as well. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Thanks, Mike, as always. And, of course, thanks, everybody, at the Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius XM, everywhere else. We'll talk to you again next week, everybody. Fun times here. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.